This is the Watch Geek Time Podcast.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning into Watch Geek Time. The Watch Geek Time Podcast. It's a conversation about heritage, history, and why we're all so hooked on horology. Sit back, relax. We're going to talk about everything from watches to watches. The Watch Geek Time Podcast is recorded live on Saturdays from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific Time. Also stream live at watchgeektime.com and on Apple TV. I am your host and resident Watch Geek, Scott Goldman. On the boards, as always, is...
It's Jody. Jody Daly.
Jody Daly. keeping the anonymity to a minimum.
Yeah.
Hey, Jody, how was your week?
Fantastic. It was hot. It's been a hot week, but it's been good.
It's a little bit hot out where you are. Maybe a few degrees cooler here, but...
Yeah. No, it's been pretty warm this week, but I would say it's the last, you know, big heat wave of summer.
Until the third week of September, when for some reason, traditionally, it's another 110 degrees outside for like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Don't know why. Usually goes along with Yom Kippur. So as if fasting isn't enough, the building has to heat up.
Yeah.
So, as we do every show, what are you wearing, Joe?
Well, I couldn't resist. I've got my Martin Brewing on.
Very nice. Again. The Doakes pocket watch conversion.
Yeah, and it's just gorgeous. And just with work lately, I've just had it in the drawer, so I haven't worn it for 3 days. So
how's it been keeping time?
It's been beautiful. If anything, it leans forward. I think over the past 4 days, I've worked it out to about half a minute fast. So, but I'm
stoked. You mean it's gained about 30 seconds over the last 4 or 5 days?
Yeah. And
pretty darn good for a
100-year-old.
Just sitting flat?
Yeah.
100 years old.
Yeah. So it's been great. I love it. It's beautiful.
You know, we were talking earlier about how watches are really tested in all different positions.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's just sitting flat causes it to run a little bit faster. And I wonder if there's some magnetism somewhere near it somehow that you're not aware of.
Yeah.
For those of us who have a lot of watches, we have some watches that keep great time. We have some watches that don't keep such great time, but we don't care. but a chronometer like the one you're wearing should certainly be accurate to within a couple of seconds a day in what is referred to all different positions. So,
and like what you were referring to, Scott, like, I mean, if you store your watch near magnetic you know, devices like your iPhone.
Right.
You know, there's magnetics in there and they can play an impact.
And next to your iPad as well.
True.
Because that strip where that people put their cover, there's a strip of magnetic
right there. Yeah.
People should be aware of that.
Yeah.
Well, today I got my trusty Aquaterra Gauss, gajillion Gauss watch today. I love that watch.
I haven't seen that for a while.
No, it's been in lockup for a while. But you know, I felt it was time to bring her out, and she's just keeping great time. But to your point, she runs a little fast.
Right.
I think the coaxial heartbeat is a little bit faster than 28.8. So I would expect this watch to run a little bit fast, just a hair fast, maybe a couple of seconds a day.
Yeah.
But what we're doing, Jody and I, is we've got an app on our phones called Watchville. For those of you who don't know what it is, I recommend you go to your respective device store and download Watchville. Mm. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Good app, right? Yeah. It culls together all the neat different sites out there that blog. We haven't shown up there, but that's okay. But also they have a great atomic clock on there that's nice to use. So, hey, a little programming note. This is episode 13, Joe.
Yeah.
Not bad, right? Woohoo.
That's great.
So Jody and I, we're going to take next week off to wrap up this season. Again, when we take a week off, you guys have the chance to binge listen.
That's great.
Whatever that is. I don't know that I would, but
I recommend go back and listen to some of the shows that you missed. The blog totally corresponds with each show, so you can get the topic of each show through each blog, what brands we covered, who we spoke with. After the break, we're going to talk to Gary Vaideta from Element in Time. He was our guest last week. This week, we're going to talk to him over the phone. He's going to tell us about the new arrivals at Element in Time. And we'll be back in 2 weeks, which is, of course, Saturday, September 17th, with some great guests lined up. And happy 51st birthday to an old friend, Charlie Sheen.
Oh, Charlie.
Today is Charlie's 51st birthday. I think everybody is surprised he made it this far, including Charlie.
And he was a collector too, Scott?
He is a heavy-duty collector, Jody.
Really?
But
he might be offloading a few of them. It's a wonder he hasn't called you. But
who says he hasn't called, Jody? Usually when he calls, I give the same old line. He says, winning. And I go, hey, yeah, you never go full retard. And then he usually goes, losing. Anyways, that's the best of my Charlie Sheen impersonation. Tons of stuff to get to today, Joe. Least of which are today's Watch Geek terms, Hairspring and Mainspring. We're going to talk about those. We'll spend a few minutes on the phone with Gary Vaideta, as I said, from Element in Time. Also, elementintime.com. I encourage you guys to check it out. Great watch site. And this week's brand focus, Van Cleef and Arpels. But before we launch into the maker of the most cool planetarium watch I've seen in a while, let's do some email, Jody. Yeah, what do you say?
Let me pull it up here. We got Tamara Soledad from Palos Verdes, California.
Okay.
She's writing in to ask about a Rolex watch that her father left to her. And she says, "Dear Scott, my father passed away about a year ago, and amongst some of the items we recovered from his safe deposit box is a Rolex Cosmograph. Mm-hmm. We believe it was a gift to our dad from one of his wealthier clients.
Okay.
The watch is complete with box and papers and even has the original tags attached.
Oh, boy.
From what I can tell, it has never been worn. Do you have any idea what the watch might be worth? Thanks in advance for your advice."
Wow. Well, Tamara, it sounds like you've got what a lot of people refer to as a Grail watch. If it is what it sounds like it is, it's known as a Paul Newman Daytona. And if it's never been worn and it still has the tags and the box and the papers, it's what a lot of us refer to as NOS or new old stock. Hold your breath, Jody. That watch might be worth over $160,000.
Wow.
Even more.
There could have been good reason he had it in the safety deposit box.
There's a lot of guys that get a gift like that and it doesn't feel good to them to wear it. They don't like the way it feels.
Right.
They're embarrassed by it. I'd like to know the provenance. You know, she says it was given to her father by one of his wealthier clients. Was he a lawyer?
Right.
Was he an accountant? Is there an engraving on the back of the watch?
Mm.
These are the sorts of things that we geek out on and that bring the watch great value because there's provenance.
Yeah.
There's heritage to the watch. The watch itself, if it was just any old watch, a Daytona from that era, would be worth tens of thousands of dollars. If never worn, new old stock, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mm. And depending on who gifted her father, what if the gift was from the president of one of the movie studios?
Iran.
So yeah. Those are the kinds of things that bring great value to the watch tomorrow. Listen, why don't we make a time for us to take a look at the watch? And we'll do an appraisal for you.
That'd be wonderful.
It'd be fun, right? You do it in the studio with us.
Yeah. And I've got another one here from Gary Cheswick. And he's writing and saying...
Gary Cheswick.
Cheswick.
From what? Aurora?
Aurora?
I don't know. Where is he from?
It just says from Tennessee here.
Oh,
so,
okay.
He's asking... I have an aging calf leather strap on my Panerai.
Uh-huh.
The strap is wearing out. What can I do to preserve the strap?
Nothing.
I mean, couldn't you oil the leather?
Watch straps, especially Panerai and aftermarket specific for Panerai watch straps, are already treated.
Right.
And if they're starting to wear out, it's just wearing out. There's not a lot you can do.
Right.
You can certainly always take an old pair of shoes and get them resold at a shoemaker.
Right.
And some of them can even add a hole to a strap for you. But once a strap starts to wear out, it's an indication that it could also fall apart at the lugs.
Right.
You know, that watch you're wearing there, if the strap starts to wear out, it's time to replace it. Because if it's wearing out at the area where it's connected to the watch and it breaks,
yeah,
that's bad news.
Yeah.
Now it's more than a $30 strap.
So, yeah.
I know a lot of guys that change their straps all the time, especially Panerai guys.
Okay.
The Panerai watches are actually designed to be able to change straps all the time. Like, I know a lot of guys that have NATO straps on their watches.
Right.
Our buddy Jonathan Ward likes to change straps often, which is interesting because it makes you feel, you know, like you got a more accessorized piece.
Yeah.
So I want you to change that strap on your watch. You know that. I want you to get this blue.
The blue.
Yeah. Because it'll pop those blue hands on there.
That's right. Yeah. So that's great.
All right. Well,
good news.
Hey, we always appreciate your questions, your comments, your emails, your love, your feedback. If you have a question or a comment, email us, scott@watchgeektime.com. Of course, tweet us, at Watch Geek Time.
There's your plug.
Yeah, Instagram. Instagram.com/WatchGeekTimePics, P-I-X. Have I done the social media plugs? My God.
And WatchGeekTime.com.
Oh, WatchGeekTime.com. Thank you, Jody.
And that's your shameless self-promotion right there.
So we're going to be... We're going to step aside in just a sec. When we do, we're going to hear from our latest sponsor, Farmers Insurance. And just, again, a quick programming note. Watch Geek Time will be off next week. We'll return on Saturday, September 17th at our regular time, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific Time. Episode 13, we're going to pop a little champagne. We already had a little whiskey before the show.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're loose. Oh, by the way, when we come back, Gary Vaideta from elementandtime.com. And by the way, he brought me to this thing, Jody, the IWJG, which is the International Watch and Jewelry Guild. It's a group of people, small group. I was a guest, as you can see by my sash.
Yeah.
Guest judge, as you can tell by me. I don't know what I was judging. There were a lot of Rolexes in the room.
There wasn't any chronographs there, Scott?
There were chronographs, of course. But they were all Rolex. Everything was Rolex. There was a couple of Jaegers you'd have liked.
Mm.
And there were some other guys that had some nice Ulysses Nardin, new old stock. But for the most part, wow, a lot of Rolex in that dealer's room. Which is why I like to say, it's not a watch. It's a Rolex. Sort of a mad cult brand, if you ask me. I love them. I don't poo-poo them. They're beautiful, wonderful watches. I own a couple. But my God, every dealer in this room. Oh, I guess you've heard enough. I guess you've heard enough. It's a conversation about heritage, history, and why we're so hooked on horology. It's the WatchGeekTime.com podcast. We're going to step aside and hear from some sponsors. Maybe you'll stay with us. We'll be right back after these words.
Farmers presents 15 seconds of smart. So you want to drive more safely.
Stop eating.
Take deep breaths.
Avoid bad weather.
Get 8 hours.
Turn it down.
And, of course, talk to farmers.
Hi.
Hi.
We are farmers. Bum, ba-da, bum, 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 bum.
There are movements so perfect, you'd hardly think they were made by humans. Omega Coaxial, the most perfect mechanical watch movement in the world.
And now, here's the watch geek, Scott Goldman.
Hey, welcome back to Watch Geek Time. My name is Scott Goldman. I am your host and resident watch geek. On the phone with me is Gary Vaideta of Element in Time and elementintime.com. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
Good,
buddy. What's up, watch geeks?
Yay, man. I'm glad you made it back safe. Gary was here last week in studio with us. Thanks again for having me down to the IWJG. I hope it worked out well for you.
It worked out okay. I got to say that our interview was a bigger moment for me. proud of it.
Well, it's good. We got a lot of thumbs up, as I told you. And, you know, it's interesting. When I came down to the show, and as I spoke to you and as Jody and I spoke during the last segment, wow, a lot of Rolex in that room, man. So I was so happy to see that you had the cool stuff in your display cases, the cool Omegas, the really couple of nice Pateks, which I posted on the watchprosite.com. So thanks again for having me down.
My pleasure, Scott.
So here's our new segment every week for you geeksters. We're going to talk to Gary about his new arrivals and maybe some older stuff he thinks is of interest that maybe didn't make it on the newsletter. So Gary, take it away. I got it in front of me. I see a Panerai in the upper left-hand corner of this week's newsletter.
Yeah, that Panerai is kind of a jewel, right? Just came out. They came out with a series of four pieces limited to boutiques only with blue dials. And we were so fortunate of getting one in, no less the rose gold piece with the 10-day movement. Did you check that movement on that watch, Scott? Did you see the back picture?
It's beautiful. It's really, it's a rare bird for sure. Is that already sold?
No, that watch is available. It's available.
That's really nice.
They did an awesome job. They worked out the P2003 movement especially for this model. And the blue dial is just stunning. That's really something you got to see in real life. Like, the pictures don't do it justice.
Right.
The color of the blue will change with every shade of light. It's incredible.
You know, I noticed that Panerai is coming out with a lot of blue dial stuff, so maybe it's a little bit hard to see in this picture that I printed out, I got to tell you.
It is hard to capture. They came out with a series of four pieces. We actually wrote about the launch on our blog, and I can leave that line there if our listeners want to check it out. It's elementintime.com/blogspot. And you could read about this and other interesting new arrivals to the industry every week.
elementintime.com/blogspot. So there's some other things nice. I see a Glashütte on the right-hand side. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's a nice piece also, discontinued model that just came in. Silver dial, it has a power reserve. It's a nice, honest watch. Beautiful movement. I don't know if you saw also the back picture of it. Glashütte Original does a very, very nice job.
That's
tuning
a beautiful
everything
watch.
In.
And in the middle picture there, before, and I know you were talking about the Panerai in the large picture, but the Omega Speedy there in the top and middle.
The Speedmaster?
Correct.
Yep, that's a regular moon landing watch. It's just a modern edition they made with the black Krakow strap and deployment buckle. also very nice. I think we had a great add to the site, which is that compressor Chronograph 2. I don't know if you noticed that, but that's a new old stock model that was just discontinued. So, you know, given that the used pieces go for $1,000 less, I think that's a great grab.
That's a good value.
For the watch. It's a lot of watch, correct. A lot of watch for the money.
Well, Glashütte Original is also, as we spoke about on the show, you know, people have to step away from Swiss watchmaking and take on the Saxon watchmaking. Obviously, you and I are fans of Lange & Söhne and Glashütte. To me, there's nothing better than a German-made watch, but that's a personal matter of opinion, I think.
Yes, I'm also a big fan of IWC, which is a German company making watches in Switzerland. So yes, we got to put Glashütte Original up there.
You know,
for sure. Maybe not as strong as A-Lange in terms of value-wise, but for sure in watchmaking.
Well, and you know, it is interesting because IWC was actually started by an American, so I kind of like that whole story. next page, I'm looking at some IWC. Funny enough, I see an IWC chrono. It looks like a Rattrapante with two hands on it.
Oh yes, that's a classic. That's the Portuguese chrono split second. Correct.
So
that was a very sought out piece a few years ago. It came a little bit down in market, you know, given to the European crisis, but it's still, you know, top collectors, top notch for a collector.
Still a hottie. What's a watch like that go for?
They're going now anywhere in the mid eights. You know, maybe higher sevens.
And that's a stainless steel watch with a Rattrapante complication.
Correct. Correct. It has a manual. It's a manual wind movement with the split second function.
Oh, very nice. And then I'm guessing that the gold one, just below it in the middle, with the 8-day movement, is also hand wound.
That one is automatic. That's actually Portuguese 7-day automatic.
So it's got the big gold rotor on the backside.
Correct.
Very nice.
Let me just double check for you. But that's the feature of that watch is that it's a new dial. They just came out with the slate gray dial for the rose gold pieces, which in the past IWC used to use this color dial in white gold watches.
Interesting. Kind of hard to see in the picture I printed out, but I think I know what you're talking about. And it's got the big date at 6, it looks like.
Yes, correct.
And then beautiful Jaeger LeCoultre, looks like a master compressor.
Yes, that was the one we just spoke before. It's the Master Compressor 2. It is a very sought-out watch. You know, and I think it's very well-priced for the condition that it's in.
What's the ask on that, if you don't mind me asking, Gary?
That one is $7,500.
That's a very good price. This is a beautiful watch, my friends. Elementintime.com. Anytime you can grab a shot like this, this is a good find, a beautiful watch. And in the lower left-hand corner, that looks like a perpetual calendar watch.
Which one? Sorry, Scott, I didn't hear you well there.
The one right below the IWC. That's a perpetual calendar watch?
The one below the IWC. Which one? What brand?
You know, it's hard for me to see on this picture, sadly. Is it Vacher & Constantin? It has a moon phase, and it looks like it might be an annual calendar and a rotor on the backside. And it's underneath the gold IWC, although in your internet world, it might be on the next page.
Oh, hold on one second, because I'm looking at the website, and that's on the newsletter. Hold on one second. Yes. Underneath the gold IWC. Okay, that's one of the articles, because our newsletter features three articles from the blog.
Ah.
So that's actually something that's not in stock, but that was recently just came out, and it is by Vacheron. Yes, it is a perpetual calendar.
So it's a perpetual moon phase in platinum with that rotor.
Correct.
That beautiful rotor. Wow, what a watch.
Yes. That is, yes, that's something that was just launched. So as I was speaking before, on our blog, you can usually read out, you know, what's trending and what's going to be released in the next few months, what's coming to the boutiques. And we can actually pre-order any of these watches that we announce.
So I would imagine that Zenith, that Zenith on the right there is part of that same blog article that I'm looking at.
Correct, yes. The Vacheron, the Zenith, and the Patek are three articles that are on our blog.
Very nice.
Of watches just released in the industry.
Now, to go a little bit sideways, folks, Gary and I are talking about an Omega Speedmaster that I love that he has. It's the Moon to Mars watch. And I just want to talk for a second about Speedmaster with you, Gary. Do you see these things going and going and going? Because there's only so many of them, just like that Bullhead chronograph that now gets ridiculous money.
I think Omega has a very strong following, and it gives us, it'll, I think their watches will be something that will sustain and gain value down the road. And if you think of it, you know, these Speedmasters, these limited editions they're making, they come out with a retail price of $5,000-$6,000, and they trade in the used market for, you know, $4,000-$5,000. So I think these values in 10 years, 20 years will increase. You know, just given the normal inflation and you know, rise of expenses and cost of production of making newer things, I think the older stuff will automatically just go up in value. I'm not sure about everything else that's overpriced today, but Omegas are clearly winners.
Well, as you and I were talking last week, all the Rolex, the flood of Rolex, I was so overwhelmed by the sheer number of after how many ever years these guys have been holding on to however many of these watches, but it was just Rolex, Rolex, Rolex. Now, I'm not going to poo-poo Rolex, but to see it dominate the aftermarket in this way, wow. I just... It caught me off guard.
It is. Listen, Rolex are, you know, they are a very strong brand. They're the number one in sales, Scott, you know, by a lot. Rolex has about 800,000 sales a year, single units, and is the number one watch company selling timepieces. And if you look at number two, which is Cartier, they come around 200-300 pieces. So that's a big difference. You know, they're selling three times more than their number, than the second best seller.
Well, it's astounding. There's no doubt. You know, and it's I think of it as a mad cult brand, as you know, and I just see it as something more like currency than anything else. And I will always be amazed at the power of Rolex, as we all should, because a lot of us collector guys, we don't have a lot of Rolexes. We might have one or two, but once you discover the world of horology, Rolex becomes, I think, secondary. Yeah, does that make sense?
I don't know if it... Well, when it comes to collecting, it kind of all began with Rolex. You know, so it's hard. I understand what you're saying, that it could become secondary to somebody that discovers all these other brands and all these stories and all the history behind the brand.
Right.
But I think it's also associated to the fact that it's very, very hard to find good vintage Rolex at an accessible price. You know, the vintage Rolex is very scarce, and the good stuff, they go to auction and they pull, you know, you can buy a whole collection sometimes with the amount of money you have to invest in one Rolex.
Right. I mean, that's also a very interesting point. And the way that their aftermarket or secondary, third, tertiary market is so strong, it's a tribute to the brand, even if they make a million watches a year and sell 800,000 of them. But hey, Gary, I really appreciate your time. It's great to talk to you. And let's do this again next week. What do you think?
Okay, let's try to do it. I know I have some pieces coming in. I have some Hoyers and some Rolexes that'll be posted next week, some vintage stuff. We could definitely touch back and talk. And I'd like to leave a word for our listeners that if they're interested in anything they see, they could send us an email, mention mention this podcast, and we could take care of them further.
Well, we appreciate
special
it.
Attention.
Thanks a lot, man. It's a conversation about heritage, history, and why we're so hooked on horology. We thank you, Gary Videtta from elementintime.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
At Farmers, we make you smarter about your insurance because what you don't know can hurt you. What if you didn't know that taking pictures of your belongings helps when you have a claim?
Nice.
Or that Farmers offers a policy that'll replace your car with a new one if it's totaled within the first two model years. And that parking near a street lamp deters thieves. The more you know, the better you can plan for what's ahead. Talk to Farmers and get smarter about your insurance.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba-da-bum, bum, bum, bum.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
Available at Lux, Bond, and Green Jewelers, Westport, Greenwich, and other locations throughout Connecticut and Massachusetts, where every box has a story.
This is the Watch Geek Time Podcast.
A man came up to me and asked me what the time was. That was on my watch, yeah. I said, does anybody really know what time it is?
Welcome back to Watch Geek Time. This is the WatchGeekTime.com podcast. My name is Scott. I am your host. With me, as always, is...
It's Jody.
Jody, when we went to commercial, we were talking to Gary Videtta. Many thanks to Gary. He has such great insight on watches and, wow, took me to this great meeting last week where I saw nothing but Rolex. But what can I tell you? It's the way the world is. People love Rolex. You know what I say? It's not a watch. It's a Rolex.
It's a Rolex.
And I also talk about the fact that unlike every other watch out there, it truly is currency. If you're in trouble somewhere in the world and you got a Rolex, somebody will give you money for it.
Right.
So if you spend $8,000-$9,000 on a Rolex, somebody's willing to give you $6,000 for it somewhere.
Yeah.
Conversely, if you spend $40,000 or $50,000 on a Patek Philippe, somebody's willing to give you $6,000 for it somewhere.
Right.
So you can see how the Rolex really holds value.
Right.
Speaking of really great brands, today's focus, Van Cleef & Arpels, whose slogan is the art of jewelry. I like Van Cleef & Arpels. I particularly like their that astronomy watch, that planetarium watch.
It's amazing.
It's really fantastic.
Yeah.
They left off those planets that take 866 years to orbit the sun, but whatever. Van Cleef & Arpels is a French jewelry watch and perfume company, obviously all about all things luxury. They were founded in Paris by Alfred Van Cleef and his father-in-law, Salomon Arpels. Alfred married into the Arpels family. One of the reasons he did is because he loved the work that Salomon was doing. And in 1896, they created Van Cleef & Arpels. Their pieces often feature flowers and animals and fairies in very, very nice cloisonné enamel dialing. And the brand was made famous and back in the day by royalty wearing them. And people have even today, including the Duchess of Windsor and Princess Grace Kelly and Elizabeth Taylor. Elizabeth Taylor was buried in her Van Cleef and Arpels. Yeah, so she's
I didn't know that
famous all emerald necklace that she was always wearing.
Right.
Was Van Cleef and Arpels. Following Solomon Arpels' death in 1906, and one thing I think that's interesting here, nobody's got hyphenated names. It's not Solomon Luis Arpels. Right. It's just Solomon Arpels. He died in 1906, and to continue on, Alfred's two brother-in-law, Charles and Julian Arpels, went into business with their brother-in-law, and they acquired a space for Van Cleef and Arpels at 22 Place Vendôme, which is right across the street from the Hotel Ritz in Paris. And that's where the firm first opened its doors. Its flagship boutique is still on the Place Vendôme, but not across from the Ritz, because the Ritz isn't there anymore.
Brian.
The third son, Louis, and there you go, there's the Louis. No hyphen, though. He joined the company right after they opened up. So Van Cleef and Arpels continue to open boutiques all around France, but they focused on locating their stores in holiday resort towns such as Deauville, Vichy, Nice, and Monte Carlo. Now, this was really quite maverick at the time because people, it was thought that if people were vacationing, they're not out buying expensive stuff. But people were wrong. And in fact, it was when these jewelers sold a great number of their pieces and had record pricing, because the holidays, when people are all on holidays, they're also very spendy and they feel very good.
That's right. They treat themselves.
So it was a very smart move. Then in 1925... a Van Cleef and Arpels bracelet, which was fashioned with red and white roses made from rubies and diamonds, won the grand prize at the International Exposition of Modern Industrial and Decorative Arts. So it was one of those world fairs.
Right.
And this essentially put Van Cleef and Arpels in the spotlight worldwide. Their name now became synonymous with haute jewelry. And their popularity soared. In 1926, Alfred and Esther's daughter, remember Esther was the Arpel and Alfred Van Cleef, her husband, their daughter, Renee, took over the company's artistic direction in 1926. Now, Renee worked closely with the already established and famous designer at the firm, René Simlocus. Let me try that again. René Simlocus. He does have a hyphenated name, though. For the next 20 years, VCNA would create some of the world's most iconic pieces of jewelry. And what's really great about Van Cleef and Arpels, they were the first haute jewelry maker to open boutiques in Japan and China.
I never knew that. That's interesting. So
they were very smart about where they opened.
Right.
And they continue to be really smart about it. Of course, they're owned by Richemont now, but we haven't gotten to that part of the story. In December of 1933, Van Cleef and Arpels received their first French patent, number 764.966, for creating a proprietary gem setting style it calls Certi Mistru, or known as mystery setting in English. The technique employs a setting where the prongs are where you set the stones. The prongs are invisible, and each stone is faceted onto these gold rails that measure actually less than 0.2 millimeters thick. The technique requires over 300 hours of work per piece, and even to this day, Only a few pieces like this are produced, and even fewer people know how to do it.
Right.
So it's one of those techniques where there's a limited number of people who can actually do it because it was passed down generational. And the pieces are incredibly limited, highly sought after, and very expensive. So what's also interesting about the technique is Chaumet, another French jeweler, another jeweler from England, received a patent for a similar technique, as did Cartier. Remember, Cartier does those mystery dials.
Yeah.
But neither of those manufacturers use it as extensively as Van Cleef and Arpels, and they still use it to this day. So VC&A was acquired by Richemont in 1999. Richemont is the huge conglomerate that owns Panerai, Cartier, Jaeger-LeCoultre, IWC, Long and Zona. I'm just mentioning a few. Yeah. Vacher and Constantin. They even own a piece of Grubel and Forsey. And Van Cleef and Arpels still maintains their stores in Southeast Asia and have opened stores in the Middle East. Its products are offered in standalone boutiques, boutiques within major department stores, and in independent authorized dealer stores around the world. Currently, standalone boutiques are located in Geneva, Milan, Shanghai, and Paris, where the company has multiple locations, including its original flagship store still located on the Plaza Vendôme in Paris's highest-end department store. It's stunning, by the way. It's a beautiful store. And keep in mind, they don't just do watches. They're more like a Cartier. Some beautiful jewelry there. In the United States, the company operates standalone boutiques in New York City, Beverly Hills, Chicago, Houston, and, of course, Las Vegas, which is our version of Macau, which from what I've seen. Van Cleef & Arpels also maintain stores in Naples, Palm Beach, and they, working on their success of 100 years ago, they have these seasonal boutiques located in Aspen, Colorado. So they don't even open a boutique there all year until the holidays because they know they're going to do bang up business. And they probably offer some Aspen boutique only pieces, you know what I mean? Very exclusive. Yeah. So they're really smart. The Chicago boutique, which opened in 2001 at 636 North Michigan Avenue, has now moved to a larger location inside of what else? The Drake Hotel, the most popular vacation spot of people visiting Chicago. The New York City flagship store, which is clearly the outlet with the highest amount of traffic, was completely designed in 2013. So clearly the brand is doing great. The last business report we saw from the brand is the company's estimated annual sales exceed 600 million euros, which is what, about $700 million US?
It's crazy.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's just one brand within Richemont.
Right.
They do 50 million euros, which is, I guess, about $56 million in watches alone. And, you know, Jody, you and I have been looking at their planetary watch, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But which, by the way, you can see on our Instagram page.
That's right.
Do you like planetarium watches?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'd like to own one one day. That would be great.
This one's only 250 grand.
Okay, that's all.
Which is why I guess I see you've got your hand on the board.
I'm watching my Martin Bruin here.
Yeah.
It's telling me to push that fader up, so.
It's a conversation about heritage history and why we're all hooked on horology. It's the WatchGeekTime.com podcast. We're going to step aside, listen to some commercials, pay for some watches. Stay with us.
Hungry bird said to a crocodile, "Can I have those bits of meat stuck between your teeth?" "Dive in," said the crocodile. "I've had a good nosh." Next day, the grateful bird brought all his mates, and from then on, the birds were never hungry, and the crocodiles never had to fork out for a hygienist. And the moral is, goodwill spread around gets around. This story was brought to you by ING Direct, 92% of whose mortgage customers would recommend them to a friend. ING Direct, a decent way to do banking. Visit ingdirect.co.uk.
UK residents 18 plus, £50,000 to £1 million subject to status. 92% based on ING Direct Customer Satisfaction Survey, April 2011.
At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything, even a UFH2O.
That's not good.
That's not good.
That's really not good.
It happened August 14th, 2008, and we covered it. Talk to Farmers. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Rolex, Patek Philippe, Jaeger-LeCoultre, Omega, Cartier, Breguet, and just about any other watch brands that come to mind. This is the Watch Geek Time Podcast.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try.
Skiddlywa! WatchGeekTab.com podcast. I am your resident Watch Geek, Scott Goldman. With me, as always, is
it's Jody. It is. Trust me.
When we went away, we were talking about Van Cleef and Arpels. Any thoughts?
You know, it's intriguing that they have delved into, say, jewelry and perfumes and stuff like that. But to uphold a quality in different markets that they do, I mean, if the jewelry faltered, you know, they got a bad name in that, it would affect all their other products.
Correct.
So to uphold a quality about everything in each division, because, I mean, they're huge industries. The jewelry and the watches, the engineering and the teams involved in that, that's huge.
Tough to do.
And what's your take on their watches, the quality?
They're gorgeous. Yeah. The Planetarium watch has my attention. They're mostly women's watches, but, you know, for the most part, the men's watches that they make are truly special. And the company leapfrogged just about everybody by putting something out nobody would even expect.
Right.
So it's really quite fantastic. But given the fact that, you know, they've made a watch that attracts me, attracts you, attracts other people, they're making $50 million a year in watches. They're doing something right. But if you look at their watches, you're going to see that they're very ornate.
Yeah.
There's a lot of enamel and a lot of stuff that goes on that is very special. So if you know anything about VC&A, we'll talk about our terms, our geekorama terms today. Should we just move on to that?
Yeah, bring it on.
All right.
Yeah.
Mainsprings and hairsprings. Hairsprings are sometimes called balance springs.
It intrigues me how they must make those things.
It's impossible to make a hairspring. You know, they just have to keep pulling a piece of wire, pulling. Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. There's pictures of this at Watch Geek Time Picks on the Instagram. So check that out, PIX. Mainspring is that spiral spring providing power to a mechanical movement. And after being wound either manually or by, you know, a rotor, an automatic winder, the mainspring, which is housed in a barrel affixed to a toothed disc with that little sort of knurled on it to keep it from spinning out, it gradually uncoils, and as it does, it causes the barrel to rotate slowly on its arbor, which keeps the watch's gears turning. Most watch mainsprings are made of this stuff called Nivaflex, which is like an alloy. It's like a strap, you know. It's not, yeah, it's you wind it up. It's really kind of interesting. It's hard to break. Very, very strong. It's all wound up.
Well, that was something we were talking about a while back, and how I was asking about how temperatures can affect that.
Right.
But you were stating how they use different metals and alloys to compensate, and they've really advanced with that kind
of things. Really, the materials that they use these days are impervious to magnetism, temperature changes, really quite fantastic.
Right, yeah.
So hairsprings. Hairsprings are like, you just said, got to be difficult to make. Right. They're really, really thin, and that's why they're called hairsprings. You see that little picture I made for you?
They're finer than a human hair.
Yeah, and it's strong. And it's what controls the swing of the oscillations or the balance. The inner end of the hairspring is attached to one end of the balance staff and the outer end to a stud on the balance cock. The spring's elasticity ensures that the balance swings back and forth at a regulated rate. The active length of the hairspring interacts with the momentum of the balance rim to determine the duration of each beat of the balance. This is why most watches are equipped with a regulator on the balance cock that can be adjusted to vary the active length of the hairspring, like on your watch, Jody. Right. Lengthening the spring causes the watch to run more slowly. Shortening the spring makes the watch run faster.
You know, that reminds me, a while back we were talking about the Long & Son?
Long & Son, you mean, yeah. my Grail watch.
Your Grail watch, and it had something like a 31-hour...
31-day.
Day. Power reserve. So yeah. How long did we work out the length of the spring if it was unwound?
The main spring, they unwound it, and it was over a mile long, over 5,280 feet. So, of course, they measure it in meters, so they said it was more like 1,800 meters long.
Wow.
Which is like 5,400 feet.
Yeah. That's just one spring for one watch.
It's unreal. Hey, by the way, a great watch resource to check out is watchtime.com, not to be confused with watchgeektime.com. Watchtime.com has a great glossary. What are we going to talk about next week? How about column wheel? Since we're going to focus on a brand that makes chronographs, we're going to talk about a column wheel.
Column wheel. And that'll be good.
Next 2 weeks, programming note. We are not going to be here next week. 2 weeks, our next show. So binge listen.
Yeah.
You'll have a great time binge listening. You'll learn something about watches. And when we come back, we're going to have Leo Gwynn from the Jaeger LeCoultre Boutique in Beverly Hills. Of course, my thanks to Gary Vaideta, Element in Time in Manhattan, New York. Elementintime.com. If you need a watch, he's the guy to see and talk to. Many thanks to our announcer, David Cobin, out of Paris. And of course, our web guy, Sergey. Most of all, my buddy, my sidekick, my man, my bass player, Jody Daly.
Thanks, Scott.
All the way from Woodland Hills. Give it up. It's a conversation about heritage, history, and why we're hooked on horology. It's the WatchGeekTime.com podcast. We'll see you in 2 weeks, and until then,
bye-bye. Bye-bye.